Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Livonia, Michigan, and earned a bachelor's degree in teaching for the emotionally impaired from Eastern Michigan University and a master's degree in autism spectrum disorder from Medina University. For 20 years, she was a special education teacher, and in 2015, she became the founder and president of Living and Learning Enrichment Center, whose mission is to help individuals with autism and related challenges reach their full potential in work relationships and in their community. Her name, Rochelle Vartanian. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Rochelle Vartanian. Rochelle, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack.
She's the founder and president of Living and Learning Enrichment Center. Rochelle, let's start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I grew up in Livonia, Michigan. I have two sisters. They were younger than me, or they are younger than me. And my mom and my dad, when I was in about third grade, my parents got divorced, and we moved to another house in Livonia. My dad always stayed in our life, and my mom remarried a man named Alex Loy, and that's my stepfather, and he's wonderful to us, like another father. And I went to Livonia Public Schools my entire life.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
The biggest thing, hard work, to work hard.
And your dad and your stepdad?
Oh, good. My dad, you do whatever you have to do to make it work. You know, it doesn't matter if you have to sell your belongings. You do what you got to do to make it work. And my stepdad, kindness. He's just the kindest person.
What did you want to be as a kid?
You know, as a kid, I think I wanted to be an actress.
And then you decide to spend your life in education. Why?
I was right out of high school. My best friend died. I mean, we got out of school June 10th, and July 4th, she died. And so I was really searching for a long time, and I was really, I don't want to say messed up, but it was difficult. And someone told me, it may have been my mom, that there was this church, and they had young girls there that had disabilities, and they lived there. So I reached out to them and asked if I could volunteer there. And every Sunday I would go there about 7 in the morning and get these young girls up and make them breakfast and get them ready for church. And then we'd go to church together, and I would spend the rest of the day with them. And what I remember being really powerful was there were some, they lived there, which, you know, you think about that now. You know, their parents put them there. But some of them, you would never have known there was an issue, maybe a little quirky. It was probably autism, but it was just shocking to me that these young girls lived there because they had special needs.
For 10 years early on, you worked for Boys and Girls Republic, which was a juvenile lockup in Farmington. Talk about that 10-year chapter in your life.
Honestly, that was one of the best parts of my life. It was something I wanted to do. I went to school at Eastern Michigan, and I had a degree in teaching for the emotionally impaired. And this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with young adults that had issues. And so Boys and Girls Republic is a place where I think they were 14 to 19 years old, and they were incarcerated. It was a place for adjudicated youth. When I first got there, there were a lot of gangs, a lot of gang people in the program, and I didn't know anything about this life. I'm a girl from Livonia, a white girl from Livonia, and you know, I know nothing about this, but I was fascinated. They were so, I guess the word will be loyal to this, what they called their sect, their gang. And they would, there were a lot of fights because if one was in one gang and one was in another, they would fight each other. And it was just so foreign from what I knew. But I was a little bit, you know, intrigued by it too. And so I, you know, read everything I could on it and went to any conference or seminar I could find on it. And I worked there for 10 years. I loved it. Some of the kids that were young adults, I should say, that were there were born into gangs and really they didn't know another life. So that was really challenging to try to have conversations with people and try to help them maybe see things differently when this is what they were born into.
Looking back now, why were they so loyal to that gang?
I think they felt like it was their family. I think that it was what stood behind them. You know, when they walked down the street, and a lot of it was they were scared, so they joined a gang so the gang would protect them. And it was their family. I mean, they fought like it was... like it was life or death. Like, this is, you know, my gang. You disrespected my gang. It was really interesting.
You never got in a fight with any of them, did you?
Nope. Okay. I never got in a fight with any of them. The other interesting thing was that there'd be young girls that would come in. They were pregnant. And some of them were in gangs. And what was interesting about that was thinking about it now, I'm older. At the time, I have such a different perspective of it now, but at the time, you know, 14 years old and pregnant and she's locked up, and what would happen is she'd go have her baby and either the baby would go to foster care or a family member would take it until she got released and she'd go back to her lockup facility.
We're talking to Rochelle Vartanian. When we come back, we're going to ask her about another 20-year chapter in her life as a special education teacher. And I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Russell. We're with Rochelle Vartanian. From 1996 to 2014, you were a special education teacher.
Yes.
Tell us about that 20-year chapter.
During that time, I worked with young adults that had severe behavioral issues. I would get my room that I had. I was at North Farmington High School. It was almost, if they couldn't make it there, they would go to a day treatment, or they were hospitalized, or they would just quit school. So it was really intense. There were a lot of fights in the room. It was not really appropriate because there'd be people in the room that, like I said, were in a gang or had just been released from a hospital. And then I'd have people in the room that had autism, high-functioning autism. And it was not appropriate, but they didn't know where else to put these individuals. So they were in the room together. And this population of people, they're walking targets to be bullied. And most of the people that were in that room were bullies. And so they would target that individual.
You're a teacher at heart.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
What do all great teachers have in common?
I think great teachers want a relationship, because they know that once you have a relationship with the student, you're going to be able to teach so much easier and impact their life.
You have four quote-unquote sons.
Yeah.
Ethan, Anthony, Vinny, and Robert.
Yep.
Your youngest son, Anthony, has Asperger's syndrome.
Yes, he does.
Tell us about Anthony.
So Anthony, when we first, so it's kind of interesting how things happen. I was a special ed teacher and teaching, and then my youngest son is diagnosed with Asperger's. At the time, that's what they were calling it. Now everything's called autism. I kind of knew something was different. When he flushed the toilet, he would put his hands over his ears because it was too loud, and there were certain things he wouldn't wear. He had a lot of fits. But the thing is, and with autism, it's the spectrum. So there's people that are need a lot of support, and you can pretty much tell when you encounter them. And then there's people like Anthony who are on the spectrum but present well. So a lot of it was, well, you know, is this just, you know, him being two, or is this, you know, what is this? My husband and I fought a lot because he felt that I was looking for something. You know, you're a special ed teacher, you're looking for something to be wrong. But just something in my gut told me something wasn't right. He was evaluated and they said he had Asperger's, and it's been a journey. I mean, it's nothing I could have prepared myself for. There were very little services back then. To get him help, I would have to drive sometimes an hour both ways, about three times a week. And he was three when he was diagnosed, and he's 18 now, and he's graduating from high school this year. He's doing really well, but there were a lot of bad times. There were a lot of really rough times, not just for him or me, but for his brothers.
If you want to learn more, www.livingandlearningcenter.org. What has Anthony taught his brothers?
I think, without them knowing it, Anthony has helped each one of them be a man of integrity, to stand up for what's right, even when it's hard, to go out of your way to help people, and to love people for their differences. And I don't think if they wouldn't have had Anthony in their life, I don't think they would be the men they are today.
What's the biggest thing Anthony has taught his mom?
Oh, good question. Gosh. Well, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't. I mean, my life would be so different. My plan was to, you know, work with women prisoners and help them reunite with their children. I mean, this is a totally different journey than I was supposed to go on. But I've never been happier now doing what I'm doing, and because I feel like it's the right thing. And I never had that feeling before. So, you know what? I guess to take a risk is what Anthony taught me.
You've had a lot of students that you've helped.
Mm-hmm.
There is one named Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And at 18 years old, you adopted him.
Mm-hmm.
Why, of all the students, him?
Oh, gosh. When Robert came into our lives, he was one of my students. He has a traumatic brain injury, and he was a mess. I mean, he was angry, and he would blow up at me, and it was a hard year. But there was something inside him, just a sweetness. And when that came out, I was just in love with him. So what happened, how the relationship started, was my boys, or I think he did, he asked us to go to one of his basketball games. So my boys and I packed up, went to the basketball game, and the following weekend we went to another one, and then we started taking him to lunch, and it just blossomed into this, you know, beautiful relationship for my boys. I mean, they just fell in love with him. And as cliche as it sounds, you know, people will say this all the time, but it's so true. You know, I was trying to help someone, but he helped us. He helped make us all whole again. I had just gotten a divorce, and he just helped heal us.
What's the biggest thing Robert has taught you?
God, I know he's going to be listening to this, too. You know what? To be a good person. He is such a good person.
In 2014, you helped start Weamara. Weamara.
Yes.
What is Weamara?
It was the initials of the kids that were in this group. So W for William, E for Ethan, A for Anthony, A for Alessandra. So that was the name of the group. And we met every Sunday at the Farmington Public Library. I would rent a room out, and we would practice social skills. And I did this with them for about 2 years. I never charged parents. I just said, hey, 1 o'clock, we're going to be at the library learning social skills. And the group just grew.
What do you mean by social skills, and why did you have to teach kids social skills?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what is a common thread with people that are on the autism spectrum is that a lot of times they miss social cues. They miss, you know, if you're looking at your watch, you know, I know, okay, I need to speed up, or maybe you got to go, or if you're yawning, I know you're tired. They miss things like that. So what happens is they end up being very lonely oftentimes because it's difficult for them to make friends. They sometimes come across as looking rude, but they're just being very honest, or they don't understand sarcasm. You know, they take it very literally. And so it's a big issue, and it's probably one of the most important things you can do for your child if they are on the autism spectrum is get them social skills. But the places I knew were very expensive and very far away.
We're talking to Rochelle Vartanian, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Rochelle Vartanian. Rochelle, what is autism?
Well, have you ever heard of the word spectrum, autism spectrum? So I think that's a really good way to start. It's a spectrum. It is different for everyone. So what I mean by that is one person that has autism is going to look totally different than someone else that has autism. And on the spectrum, there's people that need a lot of support. So maybe they're nonverbal or they have a lower IQ. And then there's all the way to the other end of the spectrum where you've got people that have college degrees and have good jobs. But they're on the spectrum, and you'll see it in different ways. Maybe they are very literal, or they don't understand sarcasm, or as I was saying earlier, have a difficult time with social cues. But the one common thread I see throughout autism is anxiety. It seems that anxiety rules these people. And a lot of them will go to school and they hold it together while they're in school. And then when they get home, they're just, you know, they let it go. And another thing that you might see is sensory issues to maybe food or noise or smell. And then another thing you might see is something called stimming, where they're really excited and they flap their hands, and then that's another characteristic of it.
We're talking to Rochelle Vartanian. If you want to learn more, www.livingandlearningcenter.org. All right, Rochelle, in 2001, 1 in 100 people, mm-hmm. they said, had autism.
Mm-hmm.
Today, 1 in 57.
Yeah.
Is it the vaccines? What is it?
Ooh. I hate when people ask me that because it's so personal and it's controversial. There's a lot of people who will say it is the vaccines. No one knows what it's from. No one knows. But there are people that will say it's from the vaccines because their child was okay. Then they had a vaccination and everything changed. So I would never disrespect anyone by saying that's not the case. But I can tell you that when Anthony was diagnosed, I decided to go back to school and get a second master's degree in autism so I could understand what he was doing and I could advocate for him. And I can tell you that what the school said, and I don't want to get anyone upset, but the schools taught us that it's not from the vaccines, that and the reason how they were able to prove it was that there were other countries that didn't vaccinate and their rate of autism was just as high as ours. No one really knows. I mean, my gut is that it's genetic. I think that if I look back at people in my family, maybe they have a hint of it, and people at my ex-husband's family, you know, a little bit, and the environment, you know, things are so different now.
2015.
Mm-hmm.
One day you decide to quit your job as a teacher,
yeah.
And you decide, I'm going to start this Living and Learning Enrichment Center. You've got no money.
Mm-mm.
You've got no experience. How did you ever get started?
Well, I prayed a lot. And I want to say it wasn't just a, you know, I'm going to do this today. I mean, I talked about this and I thought about it and I journaled about it and drew pictures about what I wanted to do for a couple years. And then the school I was working for, the school district, offered a buyout to their teachers. It wasn't a buyout where they gave you money and you put in your bank. It was a buyout that I think it was like $8,000 went into your retirement every year. So I knew something had to change. I knew that if I continued living the life I was living and didn't do something, when my son graduated, he would be doing nothing with his life and probably living with me the rest of his life. And I was basing that on the students I had worked with. Once they graduated, it was almost like the world had no place for them. So I finally, when they offered this buyout, you know, again, I prayed and prayed and prayed. And I just made the decision that I was going to quit my job and I was going to open up a center. And our goal, I would start small, but our goal would always be independent living. That's where I would be, you know, walking towards. How I did it was, you're right, I had no money and I was divorced. So I took money out of my retirement and then I ended up selling my home. And it was a big sacrifice for my boys because they had lived in this home all their life. They were born in that home. It was a house that we had built for us. It was a beautiful home. So they sacrificed a lot. And I was very fortunate because my husband, I remarried 6 years ago. And my husband, when we got married, he moved in with me, so that I didn't have to change my boy's life. And he had rented out his house during that time. So now, when we're trying to decide what we're going to do, we moved into this house that he had. With that being said, I had only been to this house twice. And both times were in the dark. I mean, there was no reason for me to go there. And when his renter moved out and we were moving in, I'm not a crier, but I put my head down and cried. I couldn't believe that this was going to be where my boys were going to have to live. It was, it's very humbling. Let me just say that.
If your sons were here, they'd say, Ma, let's be real.
Yeah.
We were living in a custom-built 3,000-square-foot home on 1 acre piece of property. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
You move us to a 1,000-square-foot home.
It's not even the size. It's... this is a perfect example. My son Anthony, so he's very realistic. I mean, he was very, you know, doesn't mince words. And he said, he was trying to make me feel better. And he said, Mom, you shouldn't feel so bad about where we live. No one would ever rob it because they wouldn't think we have money. We're safe here. So, you know, he's trying to make me feel better. And I'm thinking, you have no idea what you're saying.
How did you ever convince your husband and your sons to go along with it?
You know, that was never an issue. My husband, I mean, it's funny because I think about that too. No other person would have went along with us. I mean, he, you know, I come home and I'm telling him I'm going to quit my job. This is what we're going to do. But, you know, and he, okay, whatever you need to do. I mean, he's always been that way. And then my boys... yeah, I mean, that's where my heart breaks, is because they've made the sacrifice. But I think they understand what we're trying to do and what the future is going to be now.
All right, since 2015, you've been the founder and president of Living and Learning Enrichment Center.
Mm-hmm.
What does Living and Learning Enrichment Center do?
I'm so glad you asked. Living and Learning, we're a nonprofit, 501c3, and we work with teens and adults that have autism or related challenges. And we do this in a lot of different ways. We do it through social skill groups. We do it through clubs. We have camps. And one of the biggest things we have is job skills and employment. So it's really difficult. And it sounds like, well, you know, what's the big deal? But if you're living this life, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's our kids... they don't fit in anywhere. And so we're constantly looking for programs that will help them, and they don't exist. So the first program I came up with was a Friday night hangout. And what I wanted was just a safe place for, you know, teens and adults to come and just hang out. I knew that the kids I had been working with when I was a teacher did nothing on the weekend. I knew that they stayed home. And so I wanted a really cool place where they'd want to go. So that was the first program we created. And then we just started adding more programs based on what we knew they needed. And job skills and employment was one of the biggest needs they had. On a Friday night, if we have 30 kids, 30 young adults, the only ones that are working are the ones that we've got employed. So that was the next thing I did. I started job skills and employment. And now we're thinking about independent living. That's our next step.
If you want to learn more, www.livingandlearningcenter.org. Rochelle, if somebody came to one of these weekend events, mm-hmm. what would they see in there?
Oh, my gosh.
What do you do?
Well, first of all, it's beautiful. It is. People say when they walk in there, oh, my gosh, this just has such great energy. And it just feels so inviting and warm. And it does. I never wanted our kids to be, you know, in a church basement somewhere. I wanted them to be somewhere they were proud to be. So it's beautiful. It's painted beautifully, and the furnishings are gorgeous. It's all my furniture for my house. And it's a wonderful place to be. Everyone goes out of their way to make you feel good. We have mentors there for every program we have. So let's say you're at a Dungeons and Dragons club or an anime club, and there's 8 people in your group. There'll also be 3 people that are mentors, and we work with these young adults to be friends with them, but to help them facilitate relationships. And there's so much research to show that an adult telling someone to do something or showing them how to do something is one thing, but someone that's their peer, that's their age, telling them, it's so much more powerful, and they'll learn easier that way.
We're talking to Rochelle Vartanian. When we come back, we're going to ask her to profile a couple of these young adults. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Rochelle Vartanian, the founder and president of Living and Learning Enrichment Center. Rochelle, tell us about 2 of the young adults.
Okay. Well, one of them, I'm going to tell you because it's such an interesting story how we got this young person. But his name is Pavan, and he's from India. And how he found us was his sister was walking by. So we used to be in a little storefront, and they were walking by, and she noticed, you know, us in there, and she must have been drawn to it. And she walked in and wanted to know more information. And then she started telling me that she has a brother named Pavan, and he lives in India with her parents. And she started crying and saying, you know, he's 23 and he doesn't have a life and there's nothing there for him. And, you know, oh my gosh, I can't believe what you're doing here. My brother needs to be a part of this. So we met a few more times, her and I and her husband sat down probably 3 more times. And then we began having like regular Skype meetings with her parents, which was just, you know, so surreal, you know, that they're living in India and I'm talking to them. And what happened next is we created a schedule for him so that when he came, he would be, you know, enriched in this. And I found him a therapist, so he'd be able to go to a therapist. And so his days were filled, and that he would be learning social skills. So Pavan and his mom came from India based on what we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, for no other reason, which was just so incredible to me. And we had him, I don't know, 3-4 times a week. And I just think God puts people in your life for a reason. And I think all the time, after this is mastered, that's the next place I've got to go, is put this in place there, because there's people like Pavan that have nothing.
Speaking about nothing, let's go back to 2015.
Okay.
You've got fear. You've got doubt.
Yeah.
You don't know what way God wants you to go. And now you're like a Joan of Arc. You've been transformed. The courage you have 4 years later is unbelievable. How did that happen?
You know, it seems so funny to say that because I'm still scared every day. But, yeah, since the 4 years.
You hide it well.
Thank you. I've been told fake it till you make it. So I live by that. But, no, I'm scared all the time. I would go after work, after working at the center, I would come home and I would pray. I would honestly, literally, on my knees, just, God, help me make this happen. I know that this is so needed. People are coming from all over to be a part of this. You know, we have people that drive every week to us from Allen Park, Groseal, Grosse Pointe, South Lyon. I mean, it's because there's nothing like this anywhere. And I knew that this was important, but I didn't know business. And so my prayer was, you know, God, please help me. And I know this sounds really crazy, but I felt it. I felt like something come over me that everything's going to be okay. And you can do this. Stick this out.
Want to learn more? www.livingandlearningcenter.org. We met through Kevin and Carolyn Donovan.
Yes, we did.
And they have a 24-year-old daughter, Haley.
Yes.
That they love.
Yes.
Who has Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
In talking to Kevin recently, he says, Jack, Haley's going to be in an upcoming talent show where they expect 100-plus people, and she's going to sing a karaoke song, Caught in the Middle.
That's what she's singing?
Yes.
Aww.
He says, Jack, it's impossible that she could do that.
Yeah.
And tears are coming down his eyes. He's so proud. So you get those parents that see this.
Yeah.
But then there's other parents listening tonight where they're fighting all the time because either the wife or the husband is saying, you know, we got an issue. No, it's all in your head. What do you say to those parents who are not on the same track right now?
You know, that's really hard. And I see that a lot. Especially, and I don't want to stereotype, but I see it more with the husbands, that it's harder for them sometimes to accept it. And again, especially if they present well, because it's almost like an invisible disability, and you're constantly questioning whether this is real. What I would say to them is, you know, come on in, you know, we can all talk, put a plan together, I can answer your questions. Because that's a lot of it, you know, just a lot of questions and what's going to happen in the future and resources. I have a wealth of resources for people. But the other thing I would say, and some people don't believe in this, but I would go talk to a therapist and together, because divorce is hard. But when you have a child that has special needs, you know, it's even harder. So you need to be together on this.
A listener says, it's my life, and I'm just mad at God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was. When Anthony was diagnosed, I was very angry. I wasn't, oh, my gosh, this is so beautiful. And I feel bad saying that because I hear parents say, oh, my gosh, my child with special needs is the most beautiful gift in the world. And I need to be honest. I did not feel that way. I was so mad at God. You know, how could he do this? I'd given up my life to be a special needs teacher, and I wasn't a lazy teacher. I mean, I was in it, and I just felt so betrayed, I guess would be the word. And, you know, it took me a long time, and it was therapy, to start thinking about things differently.
Your budget this year is $3 million. How do you ever raise $3 million?
I know, right? Talking to people every single day about our vision, and then they introduce me to someone, and these meetings have been really interesting because either people are crying during the meeting or saying, I'm on board. This has to happen. So our vision, what we're trying to do is we're located in downtown Northville, and we moved to this new location about 9 months ago. And when we did that, we literally doubled in size. And we've already outgrown where we are. And I would have to think it's another God moment where right down the street from us is a piece of real estate for sale. And what that would do for us is it would allow us then to begin independent living, because directly across the street are apartments. And this has been our goal always. And the other thing about this is that it's in walking distance of everything. And that is one of the biggest issues with this population of people is, I'd say 90% of them do not drive. So being able to live somewhere that you can walk to and then have a company, I guess, support you in whatever need it is that you have, you know, it's life-changing.
Speaking of life-changing, if there's a listener tonight that's running a business and saying, I can't find workers right now and I can't hang on to them, and you made a statement that you're trying to find jobs for these young people.
That's right.
Why should I hire a person with autism?
Well, the people that we work with and we train them for these jobs, they're committed and they want to work. For some of them, I mean, it's life-changing. I mean, they have been waiting for a job, and this is their dream. So you will get someone that's committed, that's on time, that wants to be there. They're not going to call in for work. I mean, these are individuals that are typically pretty strict and disciplined about their life and their schedule. So there's just a lot of benefits to hiring someone that's on the autism spectrum.
Rochelle Vartanian?
Yes.
Thank you. You're a shining example of a lady who truly trusts in the Lord.
Absolutely.
And your life has been transformed, and hundreds of other lives have been transformed.
Thank you.
Keep it up. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Pasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.